I assume you know this. You have a podcast voice.
This is just my voice, and I got lucky that it works.
No. I've talked to you not being recorded, and it's different. Your voice is the same, but your level tone, your cadence, it's different when you're recording, and you know it.
Yes.
This is the order of battle!
This is an Operation Recall interview. This time is a bit something special. I did not sit down with a concept creator. Instead, I sat down with Mark Gerwig. He's new to the OR team, and he's been making a name for himself for the past couple years with Mark II Designs and Mark II Toys. If you've purchased any of his 3D printed weapons, you know they're fun. If you've purchased any of his factory made stuff, you know they're incredible. He's worked with a number of toy groups and companies now, and we're excited to see him on the Operation Recall team. This conversation is meandering and covers a lot of who and what he is and does. If you haven't stopped by his booth, if you haven't met him, you should. If you haven't purchased his products, you absolutely need to. His enthusiasm and positivity are a joy, and I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I had having it.
Oh, yeah. I found out at Joe Fest last year, location is pretty key. You know, the people that come out, they're going to walk the whole floor, but if they've been zigzagging up and down aisles for two and a half hours before they get to your table, maybe they've already shot their load, or I could see them coming down the aisle after like two or more hours of up and down and looking. They would be coming down that last row, and they would look right past me at the bathrooms and then head zip right to them. All day, I was just watching that.
Did you do all right the year you were in Artist Alley?
Oh, I did great. That was the first year. Yeah, like Ed had reached out to me and said, hey, you should come get a table at the show. I'm like, you think so? I don't know. So he kind of talked me into it. I had a line most of the time I was there. It was great. I did really well the first year. My table was right next to you, but I don't believe I laid eyes on you even once.
I was never there. I met the guy who was helping you, but I jackrabbit so goddamn much.
A liked my table.
He still uses your weapon packs with his classified figures.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess most people just display with your weapon packs, but A plays with your weapon packs.
No kidding. That's awesome to hear. Because I get feedback from collectors that display and do toy photography and stuff, but like not too many people are actually playing with them. So that's pretty cool.
They hold up with an 11-year-old. And because he doesn't have a lot of contemporaries, he has one or two friends that like action figures but are not clearly, you know, one of us. He breaks the 6-inch out, not the 3 3/4, when other kids come over. So other kids have played with your weapons and they are still intact.
Well, they're good. I mean, I really went about finding what I believed was the best way to do them, like the right type of plastic, the right everything. And it's a balance between scale and detail.
When you and I first were talking about that, you were talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, because we were drinking, it was the balance between realistic, but certain areas of the weapon had to be thicker than realistic because otherwise they'd snap.
That's just how it is. That's just when you scale something down that much, you're going to have weak points.
You know, these kids don't know if this is realistic or not. They don't give a shit. It looks cool and they play good stories. You care that it looks realistic. I care that it looks sort of realistic, but the kids care that it looks cool. The rule of cool is so important for kids.
No kidding. For me, like collecting G.I. Joe as a kid, there were figures that I got for the accessories. Like Repeater, I don't care about Repeater, but that gun is awesome.
Yeah.
It needs the hook to his hip. There, oh man, like I got like Fast Draw here on my desk. How awesome is that figure? I remember, like, when I saw that, I was just, my God. Like, that's the coolest thing.
We've chatted back and forth a little bit, but we haven't got to hang out since AR.
Yeah.
You had your buddy with you at AR.
Different buddy.
How did you do at AR? Is it worth coming back?
I could have lost my ass at AR and I would go back every year.
I've heard that from other people that vend.
I had such a good time at AR. I love that show. I'm, you know, talking to Brian and Travis, like I'm going to be a little more involved.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, this year, and hopefully just like continue that. No, I had a great time at that show. And I more than broke even. Like, it more than paid for itself.
That's good as well. But I've heard from other people that are vending at AR that they would lose their ass and come back. But everybody seems to be doing well. I'm glad that you're a part of that doing well. You had a great table at AR.
Right next to Ron Wagner.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, I have a tattoo artist's interpretation of the cover of G.I. Joe Real American Hero 74. With, you know, Serpentor in the his tank with the Baroness tied across the top. And that cover was drawn by Ron Wagner. And I had gone about for a little while, like, trying to find out where that original artwork was. And I haven't been successful.
I'm sure that's expensive as hell.
I thought if I can get the wherewithal, maybe at this show, like, maybe I'll run into Ron and introduce myself and see if he has any idea. And it turns out I had the table next to him, and he was super cool. I had a good time just chatting with him, man. He was really cool. He was super nice.
He's a lot of fun, kind of loose and conversational. I hit record just in case we said something that was interesting.
Well, you'll edit all this, right?
I do a huge edit. I try and make sure that everything sounds all right. So when you were like, hey, for those who don't know, I was like, oh, shit, yes, this is a great piece to put in, yes.
So I learned my lesson. I had the meeting with Carson and Kurt Zigian.
And I absolutely want to talk about that shit.
I should have known, but I did not know we were recording that and that it was going to be posted. So because they're East Coast guys and they have their busy schedules, it ended up being like kind of early in the morning for me. I wasn't going to get up like crazy early and drive to my shop and do it from there. So I figured I'd just do it from the basement. No big deal. Next time around, I'll just get up early.
I absolutely want to like dive into that because when I saw you on that video, holy shit, I was excited. I was excited, one, because we're cool, we're friends, but also because like I have your toys. I know how good they are. And your involvement just was very exciting.
Thank you. You know, part of me feels like things just got out of hand really quickly. Yeah, they're like in that video. I don't know if it made it to the final, because I think Carson edited it a bit, but there was one point where we weren't sure about something and they were just like, yeah, just give Ron a call. See what the hell he meant with that. And I just have this big stupid grin on my face. They're like, what? I'm like, oh, I'll just call Ron. I'll just give Ron Rudette a call. No big deal.
I've talked to Ron on the phone. The first time I did, I had the same thing. Like,
I remember it's like that first year of Joe Fest, that 2021 Joe Fest I went to. End of Sunday, I'm packing up my stuff and somebody walked up and I didn't look up at first because I was legitimately busy packing. And he's like, hey, man, is it OK? Can you sell a couple more things? And I look up and it's Carson, who I know from 3D Joe's, and I've bought his posters and stuff. And I'm like, holy crap. And he's like, hey, I love your stuff. I'm like, what? It's interesting how big but small this community is.
Yeah, it is. You are one of the people that recently has gone from, I know what I'm doing, to I'm working with everyone.
Yeah, it's gone very, you know, 2 years ago, I'm looking at getting out of the military. And in my head, like, I'm just going to get some lame, I'll be a government civilian, or I'll be a contractor. And that's what I'm going to do. And I might not like it, but the money will be good.
I didn't realize it was only a couple of years ago. I thought you had gotten out like 10, 15, something.
No, I got out of the military, what is this, April now? 14 months ago.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So you were still in when I met you.
Oh, yeah. Well.
No, because we didn't really meet when we sat beside each other.
Well, right. Yeah, but that first Joe Fest, I was still in the military.
Okay. I had no idea.
Well, I didn't go about advertising it.
Well, sure. But, you know, it's just, this is also part of why I talk to people about their hobbies, not about their jobs.
As the story goes, it was 2019, 2020, I was transferring from an Air Force base here in Colorado to a Army base in Maryland, and I was in the Navy. The plan was I would move out. My wife would stay here with the kids until they finished up school, you know, which was like 2 months later, and then they would come out, and that would be it. So I got out there. COVID hits. The day I got to the new command, they like this COVID iron curtain came down. They said, no one's moving. Everyone stay in place. That's it. So they got stuck here in Colorado for, it was going to be more than a year. By the time I could have moved them, I didn't have enough time left in Maryland to bother getting a lease anywhere. So they got stuck here. I was by myself in Maryland. Well, I was staying with my best friend out there, and he was so generous. He was so nice, and we had a good time. But I had a lot of extra time on my hands, so Classified came out. I just started making the file. I was just farting around in Tinkercad and putting the files up online for free, and a lot of it's still there on Thingiverse. And a lot of people just kept asking me, hey, please print this and sell it to me. Like, no. But they were persistent. They kept asking. I didn't even have a printer. A real nice guy named Eric Becker, who's in like the GI Joe 3D printing group. He does a lot of laser, like CNC stuff. He volunteered to test print stuff for me so I could at least make sure everything fit in hands and looked okay. I decided, you know, I'll do a little experiment in small business. I'll learn about that. I'll buy a printer or two, and I'll see how this goes. And it took off real fast. Like, all the money I put into like establishing the LLC and buying all the equipment and everything I needed, I broke even within like 2 days.
Oh shit.
Like real fast it took off. Like I was just, everything sold out within days, and it stayed that way for a while. But it's so much work. It's so much work doing additive manufacturing, 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
I like 3D printing as rapid prototyping. I think it serves that purpose extremely well, but I'm not such a fan of the additive manufacturing, not with the type of stuff I do, which is DLP or digital light processing, where you use a resin photopolymer and print that way. Like it's cool, but at the end of the day, it's expensive. It's messy. There's a ton of waste. It's just so much work. It's so much work.
You're not even talking about the digital sculpting side of it. You're just talking about the printing and making the physical side of it.
Yeah. Like at some point, I'm going to get to a point where I only really need to do the sculpting part. And work's coming. You know, it's honestly, I think it's coming fast given how long I've actually kind of been doing this, kind of in the toy industry, I guess. Like, it's weird to think, like, I'm a toy designer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when did that happen? That's weird. That just sort of happened.
Did you retire from the Navy?
I did, yeah.
So you're a retiree. Did you have CAD or Tinker? Like, did you have 3D experience in the Navy or before this? Or
No. Like, I started out, I enlisted in 97. So I got out of high school when I was 17. I went to the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale, got an associate's degree in advertising design, visual communications. And then I was in South Florida. And there's like three major art schools down there, and the whole place is just saturated with these graduates. And, you know, I was working in the food service industry, cooking at Bennigan's and then Outback. And I just needed a change. And so I enlisted in the Navy as a lithographer's mate. So that's running, it's desktop publishing, it's running printing presses. Yeah, so I was a lithographer. I got out in 2000. And then September 11th happens, and I re-enlisted after that. And I didn't want to do the lithographer thing anymore. I loved being a lithographer. It was great. I absolutely had a blast doing that. I was stationed on the USS Kearsarge. I did two deployments, one in 97, where we went down and we crossed the equator, went to Zaire. And there was a coup that summer. While we were there, it became the People's Republic of Congo.
Jesus.
And we actually left station there early to go up the coast to Sierra Leone because of the nonsense that was happening there in 97. That was brutal. I mean, we were bringing refugees aboard, taking them up the coast and dropping them off. But that's a whole other story. So I did that deployment. And then I did another one in 99. And we ended up in the Adriatic Sea. And this is when Kosovo was going to shit. We did a lot of stuff.
All these places going down and you were there. I mean, that's a linkage.
Yeah, I mean, I have kind of a history of that. I put myself in this position where I kind of let the needs of the Navy dictate where I went. And I liked being operational. And so that was sort of, that was my career for a long time.
That's fantastic.
I had an unusually diverse career. I did PCS afloat on three ships, the Kearsarge, Wasp, and Iwo Jima, which are all LHDs. They're amphibious assault ships. They're marine personnel carriers. So when we deploy, we take more Marines than we have sailors, and we have a whole air wing or two come out. We have Harriers and all kinds of helos. I did some space stuff. I was a ground operator for a while in Iraq. I was an airborne operator. I was a direct support officer on submarines. So I was able to do
all of it,
a little bit of everything, No, you know, at the end of the day, like, there's stuff I wanted to go do. There were commands I wanted to go to, missions I wanted to do, and I just didn't have time. And by the time I got out, I was so senior that basically my job was to sit at a desk and check email. And I hated the last 2 years was just the worst experience of my naval career were the last 2 years. It was awful. I hated it. I'm glad I'm out of that. I'm happy now. I'm so happy now, like coming to work in the morning and doing what I do now.
I think that's incredible. I mean, so you have you already had a visual arts background and a penchant for it. So you, why 3D design? Like, what made you pick that up instead of trying to like draw comics or?
My wife she wanted to get into it. She thought it was super fascinating. I mean, I always thought it was cool, but I was, you know, it seemed like getting into it was just going to be too much. But we were stationed in Mayport, Florida, which is basically Jacksonville. And she drove me to the Jacksonville Library, and they're having a class on 3D design and 3D printing. And the design part of it was just this thing called Tinkercad, which is a free-to-use, through-your-browser thing. And I had a blast kind of just teaching myself. It was like two nights. And I think I made like a Christmas tree or something. It was just before Christmas. So I made some Christmas themed something and they printed it for me. And she wanted a printer. We got her this thing called an FT5, which was a kit. And it's a big machine, but it was just parts. There was nothing assembled. It was all. So my wife took it. She had to learn how to solder and do all this stuff. And she, God bless her, she put it together. And I was into a lot of tabletop gaming at the time, specifically BattleTech. So I started making mechs.
So what's your mech?
Jaeger, which is a weird, most people aren't into that one.
Sure.
But I like it.
I mean, everybody loves the Mad Cat, but I mean, you know.
I was very much like anti, I was one of those guys that's like, fuck the clans. But I also played MechWarrior Online. That was my game for years. And I loved the Jaeger in that. And a big part of it was just because of your weapon systems were at eye level. Effectively. So it was really easy to kind of poke over something and fire and kind of get back under cover. Yeah, that's a whole story too. The guy you met that was helping me at that first Joe Fest, he was my boss. I was on the Iwo Jima. He was the SIO, the ship's intelligence officer. I was the cryptologic officer. And so he was my supervisor, my direct supervisor. And the guy that was there before him was the most awesome dude I'd ever worked for. And he was just super smart, direct. He was funny. He was just like this no bullshit guy. I loved working for him, and it was time for him to transfer. And just the rule of averages says the next guy is going to suck. Like, I'm screwed. Like, he was so awesome. This next guy is going to be so bad. And so this guy gets there. And he's there a day or two, and he's like, hey, let's go to lunch, and we'll, you know, do the get-to-know-you thing. And so he's driving us to lunch, and he's like, yeah, so what do you, you know, when you're not at work, what are you into? I'm like, I just work. You know, I have, like, an online game or two that I like to play. Like, what? I'm like, don't worry about it. It's dumb. He's like, oh, what game do you play? I'm like, you haven't heard of it. It's called MechWarrior Online. And, like, time slowed. It looked like he stopped and just, like, turned his face at me like, holy shit. He's to date the biggest BattleTech nerd I've ever met. So we hit it off quite swimmingly. So I got two really good supervisors in a row. I mean, he wasn't a good supervisor because he liked BattleTech and I did, but he was also great. But yeah, so obviously we're still friends because he comes and helps me out at Joe Fest.
One of my gaming groups, one of them is a big BattleTech guy. So, but because we're all dispersed across the country, we can't sit down with minis. So we just kind of go through the world, you know, theater of the mind over Discord. Or
yeah, Discord's great. Like I do. So I have this group of friends that I play games with. Our thing right now is PUBG. And I think we've been on PUBG for like 2 or 3 years now. We went from MWO to that. And we dabble in some other stuff from time to time. But it's, you know, I got one friend I've known since kindergarten, another guy that kind of moved to my town during high school, and then like friends he's had, and people from other gaming groups to friends I've had. Like, so we've got this really great group of guys. And honestly, the gaming part is not the thing. It's being social. Like, I'm not going to call my friends and be like, how's it going? How are the kids? But we go, we play these games, and we're on Discord, and we kind of just have natural conversations, which is great. And we talk a lot of shit.
Well, I mean, that's how I treat, well, my gaming group, as well as the Joe group, as well as my nightclub and bar groups. I think that's very cool. 3D printing is big in the minis gaming world.
Yeah.
You know, I see people doing Battletech. I see people doing Warhammer stuff.
Yeah, GW loves that.
Every 2 or 3 days, some new gaming Kickstarter shows up, or where they're just like, here, we've made a game, download our STLs.
I guess that's what we had been talking about. I was, I started making mechs and posting those online, and then some folks asked me if I could do some designs for their Kickstarters, and that was like the first time I did kind of 3D work. And it was all Tinkercad, which I stayed with way too long. You had a guest on thing, and you had asked him, like, if you wanted to get into 3D design, like, where should you start? And I think he said, you know, get with Blender and just stick with it.
Actually, more than a few people have said that. John and Troy from Longbow. Yeah. Scott just said that last week.
So I very much disagree. I think you start with Tinkercad. So there's two things.
Okay.
If you're going to be doing 3D design, you're either doing it for production to be manufactured or 3D printed, or you're doing it for... to make a sprite, like something for a video game or a movie, some type of image thing where you don't need something that can hold air. It doesn't need to be a solid. It's a wireframe with a skin.
Fair enough.
So decide what you want to do. Are you printing, or are you doing that? If you're doing video stuff, the industry standard is Maya, period. Maya. If you're doing manufacturing stuff, the industry standard is pretty much ZBrush, but I would argue Fusion is in there. Blender is this open source thing that sits kind of in the middle. It's free, so a lot of people get it. It's extremely powerful. You can literally do anything with Blender. Blender's learning curve is absolutely brutal. It's brutal. A lot of people tell you, well, you know, it's been around so long. There's lots and lots of videos you can find. The problem is there's too many videos. Even if you narrow down your search criteria, if you magically know the right question to ask to find the tool you're looking for, you're going to get so many videos. And the first 5 minutes of all of them is, you know, hit like, hit subscribe, smash that fucking button. and then they're going to bullshit around, and it's just, it's hard to find. Like when you're learning this stuff and you just need the answer to a simple question, what button do I click to do X? And you have to spend 30 or 45 minutes sifting through YouTube videos to find like the one where the guy just answers the damn question. Like, it's brutal. So like for these reasons, I'm not a fan of Blender. I have messed with it. I can swim around in it a little bit, but it for my brain, I don't find it very intuitive. And that's personal preference. But my biggest problem with it is that there's an oversaturation of information that makes it hard, and they come out with new versions, it seems like every week, and they move a button or they change the name of a function, and I just learned how to do something and now it's different and I have to learn some new thing. It drives me absolutely bananas. Anywho.
So what should someone start with? Tinkercad.
I recommend Tinkercad every time, and there's a caveat to it, but Tinkercad is extremely intuitive. It's very user-friendly. You're limited. If you're trying to do anything organic, it's not going to look right. But you can very easily learn how to navigate in 3D space. It is working with solids. So in Blender, Maya, these other things, you're dealing with points and lines and faces. There isn't necessarily a fill in there. You get to it, but it's an added layer of complexity that when you're starting out, you're trying to 3D print something, you don't need that. Just find a program that works with solids. And that's Tinkercad, which again, it's free. It's, you don't have to download anything. It's through your browser. It's extremely simple to pick up. It's the simplest thing to pick up, period. Period. The trick is to get a little comfortable with it and then move on. My primary thing is Fusion 360. Fusion 360, it's very CAD-like. My brain likes it. I picked it up pretty quick. It's pretty powerful. You got to kind of know your workflow, meaning if you have a complex shape, your path to get there sometimes has to be pretty specific to get the tools to function appropriately. But I'm very happy with it. And a big part of Fusion 360, so when you're dealing with factories specifically, and you're doing hard surface modeling, factories want a thing called a step file. It's STP or STEP. And these are files that are easily taken and manipulated by engineers at the factory when they need to make little tweaks so that two parts fit together perfectly and things like that. Yeah, I'm very, very happy with Fusion. And then if you're going to be doing organic stuff, heads, hands, web gear, that kind of thing, ZBrush is the way to go.
So you're using both tools at this point?
Yeah. I use a bunch of stuff. Like I fool around with Mudbox, and sometimes I mess around and Blender a little bit just so I know what I'm talking about sometimes.
Well, especially with these other groups that you're working with, if most of them are using Blender or have started on Blender, it's a good shared language.
It's a shared language, exactly. And so like I'll boot it up every once in a while, kind of, you know, have a look around, but I do not use it to make anything. I will use it to do renders sometimes. So one of the main files that are out there anymore, there's OBJs, which are kind of obsolete. There's STLs. STLs are sort of everywhere. And there's a thing called a 3MF, which is possibly the next thing we're going to. I really like 3MFs, but I'd use that when I'm printing something for myself. I do it as a 3MF file.
It's kind of the whole like JPEG versus TIFF versus PNG.
Yes, very much. And again, it kind of comes down to what are you doing? Like if you're sending someone a file and they're going to put a skin on it for you, it's probably going to be like an OBJ, or you'll do it in the native file of the software you're using. But like STL files are very tough to manipulate. Once you've exported something as an STL, yeah, you can do some Boolean operations to it. You can add to it, subtract to it, make it larger, make it smaller, hollow it. Sometimes you can pull faces, but you're not going to be changing curves. You're not going to, none of the complex operations are available to you with an STL file. So there's things like Mesh Mixer where you can do some stuff. You're kind of done when you export something as an STL. Like it should be pretty much done.
This has become a rather intimidating conversation for someone who's wanting to start new, but to keep it kind of simple, Tinkercad, Blender is what a lot of people are using and they're recommending because it's free. But you're recommending Tinkercad because it's just a little more intuitive and simple. It's web-based and you can learn it and move on.
Blender is just so much. It's very intimidating to kind of start. You can watch some tutorials. When I was starting to teach myself Blender, like I'd have to find a tutorial, I'd play like 10 seconds of it, pause it, and then try and find out what the hell they just did. And I'd have to like play that same 10 seconds like 30 times. Tinkercad is just so intuitive. But again, like I stayed there too long. I got really, really good at Tinkercad.
Just not the point?
No. It was really hard to move away. Because there's stuff you just can't do. And there's things that you can do it, but it's way overcomplicated. And we're talking about, you know, creating bevels and braziers and stuff like that. Like late 2020, I got a message from Marauder Rubin, who had been kind of a fan of my stuff. And I've never met him. But he's like, hey, I was talking to this guy, Bobby Valla, and he's looking for someone to do weapons. And I gave him your name, so he might give you a call. I'm like, okay, whatever. my head was so far removed from, like, I didn't know there was an online Joe community. I didn't know. I wasn't following Kickstarter or anything. I just wasn't online.
Wow.
I just wasn't online. And Bobby gave me a call, and that's how that got started. And you know, he had these, you know, these first couple of designs he wanted me to do, and I was like, yes, I can do this. And in my head, I'm like, oh shit, how am I gonna do this? So that was the catalyst that got me into Fusion 360, because I knew I wasn't gonna be able to. I knew I had known for a while I needed to get the hell away from Tinkercad and find something more powerful. You know, I was messing around with Blender, and it was clearly not going to be Blender. And I finally fooled around with Fusion 360, which is an Autodesk product, just like Tinkercad is. And it just, that worked for me.
So Marauder Rubin of Gunrunners forwarded your name to force your hand.
Yeah, like no kidding. There's a lot of people that have just been so supportive of me and have helped me out. Like I said, like Eric, who had, you know, volunteered to 3D print stuff for me, because at the time I didn't have one because I was living in my friend's apartment and all my stuff was in Colorado. I think I was on Twitch mostly. I was doing like Tinkercad tutorials, and that's how I met Artuan.
Yeah.
And Mike Kleppinger, who are the my fellow admins for the G.I. Joe 3D printing group that we created. And they've been so supportive and awesome. There's a lot of people that have my gratitude for kind of being encouraging and helping me out, and it's been kind of awesome.
So you said you've not been part of the Joe community for very long either. Like, you didn't know about the online community.
I didn't know. I found out about the Joe Con and the Collector Club. I found out like a week or two after it was like no more club. Like that's the time frame of when I started getting into Facebook and finding out about this stuff.
That was like summer 19, I think.
Probably.
So how long have you been into G.I. Joe?
Oh, I mean, I've been in G.I. Joe since the Mass Device, man. That was Channel 9. We'd get home from school and we watched G.I. Joe every single day. Like that was it. Now, I didn't, like, as a kid, I didn't have any of the the original 13, because I was still into Star Wars.
Sure.
And I honestly just didn't have a lot of toys as a kid. But once they started coming in, there was just never going to be enough. I think my first figure was Rock and Roll. My mom got me a Rock and Roll figure. And it was not the swivel arm, it was straight arm.
Oh, okay. So in the 82, nice.
After I started getting into all the different G.I. Joe groups, since I would comment from time to time, it turns out I did have friends that were into G.I. Joe still, and I just didn't know it. But we like rediscovered each other in groups. So like my art school roommate, this guy named Jay, who did the on my weapon sets, he designed the sticker on the front of the weapon sets for me.
Oh, so your A and B boxes?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, shit, those are a good design.
Yeah, that blueprint idea. Like, I had an idea of what needed to go on there, but I wasn't confident with what I was doing. I was like, it was all just in a vacuum, and I had, you know, no one to bounce stuff off of. And so I asked him if he'd take a whack at it, and he did the blueprint. I was like, shit, that's perfect. That's brilliant. So he was in Joe groups, and so we started talking again from that. And we hadn't spoken in a couple of years, I think. And then another guy that I've known since like kindergarten, I remember playing soccer with in like kindergarten all the way through high school. My friend Chuck, who was helping me out at Joe Fest last year. Chuck, you met him. Yeah, like I've known him since like kindergarten. But we hadn't talked in years, but we started chatting on the Joe groups because he was into it. So
G.I. Joe is eternal, I guess.
Yeah.
Our community is really small, grand scheme of things. But it feels enormous because every time I turn around, I'm meeting someone new. And so I just assumed you were one of these like lifers, like Carson or like Marauder Rubin, who had just been here forever. So it's very neat that, no, you came in as a firebrand and just set shit on fire. Here you are now. You have factory made weapons. Is it the two packs or is there a third coming?
I've got the two. I'm probably doing a Kickstarter.
Okay.
And we'll see where it goes.
Is that going to stay 6-inch or 112?
No. Yeah. I'm keeping everything kind of 112 scale for 6-inch action. And it's
for your own brand.
It's not 112 scale. It's some weird thing, but,
yeah, we've always used scale as a bit of a wonky term in G.I. Joe, right? Cause 3¾ and 4-inch are both 118.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your own brand is 6-inch-ish. It's that scale.
Yeah.
But you are working on, and you have worked on 4-inch.
Yeah.
You've worked on 6-inch. You're now working on 3¾ O-ring. You have made 3D printed transformers, 3D printed vehicles for 4-inch figures. I have your Motormaster still in play.
That blows my mind a little bit.
He wanted me to glue the smokestacks in, but not glue the back on, because if the rear wheels were glued into the cab, He couldn't blow it up.
That's awesome.
It was Joe Lanta last year. You had an Optimus and a Motomaster 3D printed, just the cabs. They didn't transform, but you could fit a 4-inch figure in them. And we took one home. I don't think you were even selling them, but A, had to have one and bugged the shit out of you about it. Still a year later is getting play.
I get these ideas in my head and then I start chasing them. And sometimes I finish them and sometimes I don't. So like I wanted to start doing a little more action figure photography. And I thought, you know, I'll recreate various G.I. Joe Real American Hero covers. And that'll be kind of the what I do. And is it 47? There's an issue and it's Lady J on a silver Mirage being chased down by this big red semi truck. And it, what looks like a bat driving it.
Yes.
So I'm like, I'll just make a truck. And I was like, you know what? That kind of looks like Prime a little bit. It's red and got the flat front. Like, I'll do an FL86 Freightliner and that'll be the truck. And so I did that. And then it took me a little while, but I eventually did the Silver Mirage, which turned out great. But the Lady J figure can't really sit on it because her legs won't come up to 90. And she's got like a weird squat. So I don't know. I'm going to have to customize some figure to make Lady J able to sit on that damn bike. But then I'm going to take that picture and it's going to be cool. I'll post it on Instagram. My mom will hit that like button for me. And
at AR, you had a shark that was big enough for a 6-inch figure.
Yeah, the 2-seater.
You've just been kind of going ham with whatever comes up and is fun at the moment. It's certainly serving you well. So you have your own brand. You've also had a bunch of 4-inch 3D printed stuff. The laser tag gun is very popular.
Oh, yeah. People really like the laser tag stuff.
It's because it's dope.
There's a couple people that have me do stuff in 1/6 scale for them, which is easy enough.
Okay.
I don't like selling that stuff on Etsy. In the beginning, I thought, great, I can do this stuff in 1/18 scale, 1/12 scale, 1/6 scale. Like, it's just like I just change the scale, print it, done. But it really confuses people.
Sure.
And not to, I am 1,000% guilty of this too. When you go online, you're just kind of looking at pictures and clicking and you don't read the description. And I've absolutely done that. It's human nature. Our attention spans are so short now that that is the thing that has forced me to stick to one scale for my stuff.
And that is going to be the 6-inch.
Yeah. I don't mind sending people replacement parts. I don't mind doing a lot of things, but what I have come to realize is I don't have enough time on this earth to do all the stuff I want to do. So unnecessarily causing me to spend time doing stuff I shouldn't have to do drives me absolutely nuts.
You've worked in mini scale. Now you just told me that you've done 12-inch or 1/6.
Like I like the idea of having bigger scale because I'm free to have more detail and make things more accurate, you know?
Do you collect at these scales? Do you collect at the 1/6 scale as well as smaller scales?
No. I want to very badly. Like, I really am into the sideshow stuff. Well, no, that's not a fair thing to say. I want to be into the sideshow stuff because it's awesome. I'm way late getting into it, so the price points are a bit much. And that's what's kind of preventing me from getting into it right now.
Something you could do just as a mess around model for 12-inch is Cotswold puts out a pretty cheap of the old G.I. Joe 12-inch bodies with the Kung Fu grip hands. He also does like, you know, flocked heads or whatever, but you could probably just do your own. But that would be a good way to cheaply get into 12-inch because I'm with you. Sideshow is it's a bit cost prohibitive when you collect pretty much anything outside of just Sideshow.
Yeah, it's like I just wish I had gotten into this stuff when it was present.
Yeah, same. Because what you just showed me on video was a lot of gear for 12-inch, including more laser tag stuff. So were you a laser tag kid?
Oh, yeah. I loved that stuff when I was a kid. I've got a younger brother. And he and I would play with that stuff. And then we did, like, with Cub Scouts, maybe Boy Scouts, I think it was Cub Scouts, we would do a lock-in, like, at the local junior high where we, like, you know, it's Saturday night, and we'd go at sometime in the afternoon, and then we just had our run of the whole school until the next morning. So, like, nobody slept. We played these massive laser tag games. We'd watch all the movies I wasn't allowed to watch at home, Terminator and all those great 80s action movies that I still love.
Kind of going down this path then, you're now involved with Carson with Operation Recall, which just adds a whole nother scale to your line. Speaking of scales, at JoeFest 21, you were also selling full-size one-to-ones of Cobra Commander gun.
Yeah.
Firefly submachine gun. I think you had the Sunbow rifle, XLR-2, XLR-3?
3A, I think. Those were an experiment, you know, like, can I take this design that I have for these little things and, like, have I put enough detail in them that if I blow them up, they don't look stupid?
You sold out.
I would say, based on the feedback, yeah, like, I sold all of them. Just such long prints, you know? Like,
sure.
I don't have it in me to sell prints that, like, take me a week just to print. And then I have to sand it and putty it and sand it and sand it and filler primer it and sand it. And then sand it, and then some more filler primer and some putty and sand it. I don't have the time.
No one's going to pay what that is worth. No one's going to pay what that costs to make in times of time, energy, effort.
And that's why I'm not selling a lot of like these vehicles I'm doing now. Like I did an ASP. The Silver Mirage actually isn't that bad. I can print one of those in a day and a half. But the ASP is almost a week. Like that prime truck, I wanted one in a couple different colors so I could take pictures with it, but then I just have nothing to do with it. Even on like the Ferret, what a pain in the ass to print that thing is. No one wants to pay what it would cost. Cost is a weird thing because a lot of it has to do with time, right? Like let's say, you know what's real popular right now? I had a guy on Instagram say, hey, you should take the sidecar from the Silver Mirage and make it work on the Ram. And I get a lot of people who have suggestions, and it's usually like something that they want that's going to take me 50 hours to do.
And it's a one-off, yeah. Or maybe a five-off.
So a lot of times they're like, it's not really worthwhile. But that was like a really easy thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Ram sidecar that I've been doing?
Yeah.
For me, like the Ram is all about that gun. Always has been.
Absolutely.
As a kid, like a Gatling gun? Are you kidding? So I didn't want to lose that. So like, I grabbed one of these Hasbro Rams that I got and I looked at it. I'm like, I can make this work. And I made a little piece that slides in where the drum would go and then that mounts to the thing. But that's turned out to be really popular. And I can do, if I was physically at my shop longer, I could do four of those in a day.
Okay.
In a day. Print. Just the print part. Not the sanding and priming and painting and all that stuff. But I could do four of those in a day. Let's say if that's my basis for calculating the value of space and time on a printer. In a day, I think I sell them for like $80. So that's like $320 for a day of printing. As a goofy, weird place to start average, right?
Sure.
$320 a day is what I can earn printing on one of these machines. Now I take an ASP and that takes me a week, like six days. So multiply what I could earn in one day of printing sidecars by that week. Is that what the ASP is worth? No one wants to pay that. It's just a weird thing. Yeah.
When you look at something like that, the other thing to consider is $320 in a day is not pure profit.
Oh, no.
$320 in a day is not you making $32 an hour for 10 hours. You're talking about the cost of having the shop open for the day, the electricity, the water, running the machine, the materials of the machine. You're backing out a ton of things.
Yeah, no, it's rent, it's cam, the waste. I have a box here that I need to take a picture of later today. For the last like week and a half, I've kept all like the waste material, all the support material. So when you 3D print, like you print your supports as it's building, and then you got to pull all that stuff off. So for the last week and a half, I kept all my support material. I filled this giant box with it, and it's well over $100 worth of resin that's just going in the trash.
$100 worth of waste in a week.
Yeah, and that's a guesstimate. Like it could be more. It's not less.
Sure, that's $20 a day at a minimum. So if you talk about as a minimum, you're spending $20 a day on trash.
So for resin prints, like you take them out and you have to post-process them. They don't just come out of the machine.
Correct.
You can't even touch them. Like you got to wear rubber gloves coated in this liquid photopolymer that's just super gross and gets everywhere.
That also goes in the trash.
Yeah, I gotta wash it in. I use denatured alcohol. You can use rubbing alcohol. Some people like acetone. I think that shit's way too brutal. Acetone will melt a plastic cup if you put it in there for more than 10 seconds. So it's a bit much. But yeah, like I go through this denatured. I go through like a gallon of denatured alcohol every like 10 days.
So you're closer to $100+ a day in waste.
And other expenses, yeah.
That's not a complaint. That's just the nature of the business that you're in. But that is really, that's really important when you start talking about cost.
It's a weird thing, man.
I think it's good information out there. You know, we're all cheap. We're all trying to get things for as low as we can. We have to. Shit's expensive. You know, McDonald's is no longer a $3 meal.
Yeah, and I'm no different. I'm no different. The thing that makes me a little different is like if I see something and I want it, I can just make it. And to me, I get a satisfaction from that. But I'm the same way. Like I have to pinch my purse and try and get the best deal I can.
Absolutely.
Let me plug this real quick. At Joe Fest this year, Juan, Michael, and I will be doing a G.I. Joe 3D printing panel.
Excellent.
And like the whole theme of it is like educating people that have a limited knowledge of 3D printing, because it's such a big deal now. Like it's everywhere. And I think people have a lot of questions. Maybe they want to get into it, but they're not sure. And so that's kind of be the point of that panel, is talking about like how to get into it. I get a question a lot from people that is like a red flag, not a red flag, but it instantly clues me into that they have no idea what they're talking about. And it's like, hey, can you print me a, and then name the random thing. Immediately it's like, well, do you have a file? A what? Okay. So we're not even talking about printing. You're talking about, can I design a thing and then manufacture it for you?
That has its own level of cost.
Yeah. It's this whole other thing. And it's not anyone's fault.
No.
They just don't know.
The goalposts of production have moved closer and closer to the individual, but the act of production is still a beast that people don't see.
Yeah, there's some folks that think 3D printing is like the food replicator in Star Trek. Like you can just walk up to it and say, print me a blah, 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 and then you walk away and you come back and it's there. And that is very much not the case.
I keep trying to come back to OR because I'm intensely excited by it.
Yeah.
And because you are now, you're more than rubbing shoulders. You're rubbing thoughts and designs and production with the likes of Bill Merkline, which is fucking amazing. And Ron Rudat and Mark Pennington and Kirk Bazigian. We all know them. Many of us are friends with them, but you're at a different level. And holy shit, my dude.
Yeah. It's still super weird that happened.
I tuned into the video and I saw Kirk and Carson and you sitting there and talking about things. And I know what you do. And we've talked about what you do, not just here, but which has been a little technical, but we've had drinks. And yet you were talking at a level that was, I didn't know that you were doing. And I was like pumping my fist in the air. I was cheering. I was yelling at Alexander, like, come here and see this. We're friends. So that's part of it. But also because I know the quality of your work and seeing you on stage with our fathers and uncles, it brings a lot of confidence. I mean, I already had a lot of confidence, obviously, but it brings an extra level of modern confidence. And it's just goddamn exciting.
I was all in on this Kickstarter, right? Like never imagined I'd be a part of it. Carson wanted to 3D print these bucks for Bill. And, you know, he jumped in the, he had a printing question. So he got in like the Facebook group, the Jedo 3D printing Facebook group, and asked a question. And I reached out to him and I'm like, hey, like, if you have more questions, just talk to me directly. And we can get on the phone and I can talk you through whatever. Which isn't even exactly true, because he's got a really, really nice machine.
Yes.
But the basics are still the same. You know, I told him, hey, like, if you need any extra design help, you know, let me know. And he's like, as a matter of fact, I wanted to talk to you about that. So that's how that came to be. So I'm so fucking glad. But like, it's such a, like, I feel like this level of responsibility, because I think a lot of people have high hopes for this thing. It's in a way quite the experiment. because he's trying to merge. I mean, at the end of the day, manufacturing today is manufacturing today. Like, the factories aren't going to backtrack and do things the way they did it in the 80s. So on the front end, you know, these figures are being designed the way they were in the 80s, but we're going to have to manipulate them to get them factory ready.
That makes sense.
It's all perfectly doable, but it's work. It's gonna take time and effort. I saw the video of Carson at Joe Fest last year where he even mentioned, like, you know, these guys kind of want to try some height and width variation. I thought that's interesting. I didn't think I'd have anything to do with it. It's an experiment. Like, I don't think anything is locked in place until it is. You know, we'll see. Like I hadn't done Bucks. They weren't necessarily hard, but man, was it tedious.
Sure.
Doing five or six of them. And if you crack open these figures, like the internal guts, like, it has to be just right. You know, the call sign longbow buck was the original buck. And I would kind of use that as a basis to kind of start from.
They've got a nice buck.
It's a great buck.
It's very cool that you guys have that familiar relationship between the two lines.
Carson had that relationship, but it turns out Troy is like an hour north of me. And so when there's local shows and stuff that I saw him this weekend because he had a little table at a local show.
I actually meant the relationship between the figures, but the relationship between the people is also excites me in the creative space of the Joe community and the toy community. It's not a big community. Everybody is related. Everybody knows each other. And the fact that from a 3 3/4 scale, everyone is sort of working off each other or working with each other in some sort of capacity is really kind of cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's true in its entirety, because I find out about some new O-ring thing that somebody's working on. It seems like every week. It seems like there's a lot of people who kind of had a similar idea around the same time. And then, you know, there's all these different stages of development. Obviously, the longbow stuff's been in the works for a while. I did a little bit of work for a thing called Delta 17, just like a couple of weapons.
Yeah, they've been really close-lipped on where they're coming from or where they're going. But, I mean, there's a bunch of us that are just kind of watching and excited for them. When I say that everybody's kind of in it together, I'm thinking sort of the late-stage groups. But you're right, there are a lot of people bubbling up from the bottom that we haven't even heard of yet.
Over the next 2 years, it's going to be real interesting to see all the stuff that comes to fruition.
And it's exciting that you're in the middle of that. When you were talking about the $5, just for reference, you know, G.I. Joe is everybody's, you know, standard. But we don't have a 3 3/4 digital buck of 1985 G.I. Joes, because that's not what they did.
Right, right-ish. So they didn't have it then, but there's lots of people who have created
correct
variations of that now. Like, there's a guy that's in my on the 3D printing group. Was it Viper 6? And he has gone, not to just keep plugging stuff, but we've got an episode of the podcast that was on scanning, which I know almost nothing about. Everything I know about scanning, I know from having interviewed him on this podcast.
Which podcast are we talking about?
This is the G.I. Joe 3D printing.
So there is a G.I. Joe 3D printing podcast?
Yeah. So myself, Juan.
I have a G.I. Joe podcast that I'm not subscribing to and listening to. You have to, like, let me know.
It's a video. It's not a podcast. It's a podcast in name only. So yeah, like once a month, we pick a 3D printing G.I. Joe-ish related topic and we try and get a guest from the group on who knows more about the shit than we do. Then it's supposed to be like an hour. It usually goes a little over.
Are you putting that on YouTube or are you just keeping it in the Facebook group?
No, it's on YouTube. There's a G.I. Joe 3D printing YouTube channel.
Excellent.
So like this Saturday, we're doing rendering.
So you were saying you had Viper on for scanning before I interrupted.
Yeah. So what he does is he this is not all he does, but one of the things he does. He was scanning the figures, taking them into Blender, and then he would basically re-sculpt them using the scan as a reference. So he can sharpen things up, tighten things up. And at the end, he ends up with files that he can print at whatever size he wants. So he does, I want to say he does 6-inch and 12-inch. And he, like, somebody commissioned him to do a 6-foot-tall battle android trooper. It's the most amazing, it's the eighth wonder of the world. It's the most amazing thing.
Okay, that's going to be wild.
And I haven't seen, like, the last time I saw it, it wasn't quite done printing, because I mean, it's not one piece. It's an articulated action figure that just happens to be 6 foot tall. So last time I saw it wasn't painted yet. I'm not sure where he is with it.
Holy crap.
Yeah, super talented guy. Really nice. Like, it's interesting because you've got all these, like, subcultures. Within the 3D printing G.I. Joe community, the level of talent is unbelievable. Everyone's very kind of like-minded. You have to be able and willing to problem solve and troubleshoot, and you have to have a certain level of patience to kind of push through and do this stuff. So just the people are amazing. But the weird thing about it is, like, I would love to do, like, collaborations with these guys. None of us need each other. You know, like if I have a question, sometimes, you know, like, I get stuck on something, I might put it out in the group and someone will usually have an answer. But at the end of the day, like, I don't need help doing any of the stuff I do. Like, I do it. And so do they. So it's weird. There's a slight level of competitiveness, and it has more to do with who does something first. I don't feel like there's, like, an unwritten rule. Like, if someone else makes something, you can't. That's not a thing, really. But I would rather be the guy that did it first.
That's a hell of a foot race, because there's a lot of things to do first.
There's a lot. And there's some obvious items, like vamps and stingers. A lot of people have made versions of those. And I've never seen one that I thought was bad. You know, like, they're all pretty damn close. There's a guy named Joe Walder who's got a Facebook page. He's definitely got an Instagram. It's Joe's Joes. And he's been doing scale props. But he'd done a vamp. He'd done a Thunder Machine, like, 2 years ago. And then he just started doing, like, variations of the vamps, like, extended vamps and, like, all kinds of... And it's amazing. It's amazing. And Zero Props, that's another one. He's got an amazing-looking vamp. He does a bunch of great stuff. Yeah, like, so the G.I. Joe 3D printing group has a lot of voyeurs. There's a lot of people who join with no interest in learning 3D design or 3D printing in any way, and that's fine. They want to see the kind of stuff people are doing. That's cool. Which is great, because, like, there's so many talented folks in this group making just cool shit.
That's incredible. Yeah, I think where I was kind of coming from was sort of what we've seen, what is working toward factory fruition. You know, we've seen swivel wrists now, and we've seen a double jointed neck now. Hidden Forces is messing with angled figure stands and customizable weapons. You know, you guys with Operation Recall have adjusted the length on different parts of the body, whether it be, you know, the bottom part of the leg, the thighs, the torso, to give different height and different size to people, and it still fits within that same localization. And then using sort of a similar starting buck as call sign and everything else. Like, I just see from this level, there's some really cool innovation happening in the O-ring space. And then what you're saying is shit we haven't even seen yet is going to blow us away next. It's very exciting for us O-ring guys.
I've been slowly kind of growing my O-ring collection. I had almost nothing left from my childhood. Like, we played hard. You know, I went away to school. My brother got whatever was left, and there was almost nothing left. And so I've been slowly grabbing stuff here and there. I will never have all of it. I'll never be a completist, and I'm comfortable with that. But there's certain things I want. So, for example, at AR, I bought one O-ring figure, and it was Tiger Force Flint. And it was because I had done like the first custom 6-inch figure I've ever done was a Tiger Force Flint to put on top of the that Tiger Paw that I had done, the yellow ferret, right? Yeah. The Tiger Force ferret. But I had done one, and I had just been using online pictures as a reference for how to paint him, and so I felt like I needed to have that figure, so I bought it.
So what's coming up next for you then? You have a Kickstarter that you're talking about, but you haven't launched.
One way or another, there's a Kickstarter in my future. Like, I want to do a 1/12 scale vehicle, and the plan was I was going to do what's called a technical, which is basically, it's a shitty pickup truck with a gun mounted in the back. And we would see them, you know, over in the Middle East, we you know, saw them all the time, and they're pretty prolific, really. And I wanted to do it, I don't want to say cheap, but as inexpensively as possible, as few parts as possible, as affordable as possible. It just needs to look good, And kind of my catchphrase for that is, it's not the gem of your collection, it's the thing the gem of your collection strafes at the river, right? So that's going to happen eventually. I had done one design without the gun on the back. It's just like a crappy pickup truck. And I was like, man, that's kind of boring. And then I start thinking, like, I should do it more up armory. And I remember just being really excited when we got the MRAPs in Iraq. So I thought, you know, I'll make it look a little more like that. And then that kind of grew old on me. And I thought, no, it should look more like a boring pickup truck. But at the end of the day, I need to have a really nice prototype if I'm going to do a Kickstarter and get it to fund. And that's pretty cost prohibitive because I can't make it myself. I don't have the tools to make that myself. And so that's kind of on hiatus. Action Force potentially has a vehicle coming, and I am actually working with Greg Wayward Goat on doing a 1/12 scale Marv. So that's potentially coming. Like it's a lot of it is a bit of an experiment. Like, can we make these things at this scale at a price point that people will go for?
The Marv is an interesting vehicle because it did not succeed in its Kickstarter, but he was able to still bring it to market. MTF has it at their booth. I don't know where else he's selling it other than online and with Marauders. Everyone I've talked to that has bought one loves it.
I got one. I bought two really late. I wanted to get one from him at Joe Fest last year, and I just didn't get to it. So I ordered two a couple months back. I had put off buying one for a long time because I assumed the price point was going to be like twice what it was. I want to say it's 60. Like it's so affordable. I hate that I didn't.
And it's customizable.
Yeah. Like it's fantastic. It's really, really good.
I think for my end, because I'm an O-ring guy and kind of an old school Joe guy, I wish it was a little more open, but being enclosed allows all the customizing and all the part swapping. It looks great with 3 3/4. It looks great with 4-inch.
If you want it more open, you can just take the doors off and have it run without the doors, man. Like,
there you are.
One of the things I like about it is, as a guy who rolled around in Iraq in an up armored 1151 and a Striker and a, you know, like it genuinely reminds me of those vehicles.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's fantastic. The gentleman that designed it originally passed away.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah. And I found out talking to Greg. He did a great job. He did an absolutely fantastic job. So now the trick is upscale it, which isn't as simple as just like change the scale. Doors become thicker. You know, like there's a thickness that it kind of has to hit.
Sure.
For the factory. There's work that has to get done other than just changing the scale. And then there's some changes that Greg wants to make as well. We'll get that knocked out, and then it'll be, you know, take it to the factory and find out like what the damage is going to be to get that thing tooled and made.
And that will help inform if you can do a tactical.
That will inform whether or not it can be done. Because it's a lot of tooling. You know, when you increase the scale like that, the cost of tooling just...
The crappy truck with a gun on top idea, I would love a handful of those all in multi-panel colors, really slapped together at the O-ring or 4-inch scale. I think that would be lovely. That would be so fun. And I know that's not your scale, but I'm telling you, like, I think that would be fun as hell.
I don't disagree. I don't know if the market is indeed there.
Right. Selling five to me isn't going to make your bottom line.
You know, right now the trend, like where the action is 6-inch. That's where people are at. That's where the main lines that are out there are. So if you're going to do something, I think that's the scale to put your toes into.
6-inch vehicles are so difficult because they're enormous. I mean, but then again, you know, in the 60s, we did 12-inch vehicles. So
it's true. A lot of why you don't see a lot of these big things anymore is like just the retailers, Walmart, Target, what have you. They don't want big things taking up shelf space. Like, that's brutal.
It's a real estate conversation.
And unfortunately, you can't increase the price of something just because you've increased the scale. Not exponentially, right? Like, so you're going to make a little less money off the big pieces. It's just how it is. So it's tough. It's a tough nut to crack. There's a demand for it. But at the end of the day, if you're not willing to pay for it, no one's going to get it.
Speaking of 6-inch scale and paying for it and all of us getting it, your weapons are very realistic. But I know you're a sci-fi kid as well. So have you considered anything in that?
Imaginary? Yeah, no, it's crossed my head lots. And I'm very fortunate in that I'm now working on Operation Recall, because we've got a bunch of sci-fi weapons and accessories in the line. And like, no kidding, I started working on Damselfly's missile rocket launcher gun. I apologize that I don't know the right term for that type of weapon system, because it doesn't.
I don't either.
They don't exist in the real world. And I'm loving it. Like, I have had more fun working on that thing than kind of anything else I've done in a little while, because it is 100% an imaginary thing that doesn't exist in the real world. And oh, by the way, Ron Rudat drew it. So it's an interesting challenge. Like, right away, like the first time I look at the drawing, like, I know there's some things that just have to change, because it's at the end of the day, it has to fit in the figure's hand.
Sure.
So there's some things I had to wiggle around a little bit. But yeah, just having fun making this cool thing. Like, that's my job, is take this picture and make a physical object that's as cool as possible. And I'm pretty happy with that.
You're doing that also with Damselfly's totally realistic backpack as well.
The jetpack, yeah. I started that. I need to figure out how to make it work. Not fly, obviously, but we're going to have the wings sweep out, and the preference is to have it.
Well, not just the wings sweep out, but I think from the video you were saying, like the I don't know what they're called, what their propellers are, the intakes.
We'll call it a turbine or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Sure. The turbines also adjust, as well as...
We'll see. We're going to see. So like, I'm going to shoot for the moon with the initial design. And if tooling is cost prohibitive or something, we'll dial back. But like, the initial design, my intention is to go all out, and we'll go from there.
And I noticed also in the video that you were on with Kirk and Carson, you're also touching the animals. There are several animal companions. You're messing with those.
Haven't yet. We'll see. I would say I think it's a possibility. It's going to be like, if...
So you were advising on them at this point.
Right. If Bill wants to sculpt them, I'm not going to get involved in that. Like, I want him to do it.
Sure.
I suspect more people want everyone else in this group to have more input than me. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I want them to do, not because I don't want to do the work, but because like, I want their stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that was the promise of the Kickstarter, is we're getting those guys, not me. We're getting those guys to make something.
From the very beginning, even with Rotello, Bill did the figure, but a lot of the equipment was a mix match of whether it was, some of it was Bill or all of it was 3D sculpted. There was, you know, even from the jump.
I would think it was all 3D sculpted. Bill did the figure, but everything else was 3D.
Right. And he's been talking about that from the beginning with Rotello, before OR was announced. So I don't think it's unreasonable to expect a large non-Bill hand in the equipment, in the accessories. Do you have a, are you, can you even talk about the list of who you're working on, or is that kind of kept under wraps?
No, I mean, you saw all of that in the video. Carson is sharing as much as he can. Like, I don't have any behind the scene, anything that you haven't already heard. Like, it's just, I need to quit farting around and get the work done. But there's no secrets being kept. Carson's being as transparent as he can. And that was part of the promise of the Kickstarter, is letting the community see as much behind the curtains as possible. Like, I don't think anyone wants to watch me fart around in Fusion 360 for hundreds of hours or whatever it is. But once I start pushing pieces to Carson so he can kind of 3D print them, he'll start sharing it. I assume.
As much as I'm very excited for Bill to work on Alexander's character, in that video, they mentioned that you might be messing with the robot leg.
Yeah, I sort of put that out there.
Well, Alexander, like, cheered, by the way.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, you have an 11-year-old fan.
I think it'd be real tough to kind of mix what I do, and I do have a bit of a style. I can't see it, but I'm told I have a I've got like a style when I design stuff, and I don't know that you could marry what I do and what Bill does on a single figure organically and have it come across as seamless, like without one of us or both of us deliberately trying to change things. But I think the cyber leg that's an opportunity. Like, it doesn't need to look the same. Like, it should look a little alien to the figure. So I think that's a great place where I can contribute on a figure without it looking wrong.
If Bill designs that robot leg, Alexander's going to be excited. If you do it, he's going to be excited. I think that is kind of the win-win of this project.
Yeah, it is 100% Carson's got final decision, but he's going to listen to the guys in the group, and they're going to do the thing that looks best.
I know other concept creators are excited that your hands are touching this, even if it's a little, right? Like, as you just said, even if Carson pulls back and you only do one or two things, or if you just advise and you don't actually build anything, the fact that you're on the project isn't something that's just made me happy. My opinion is null and void in this conversation, really, but other concept creators that I've talked to, not just Alexander, are excited that you're on the team.
That's cool. That means a lot, and I appreciate that. That's yeah. Like I said earlier, like sometimes it feels like things got out of hand really quickly. I get a good amount of feedback on the Etsy store. People get their products, and they leave overwhelmingly positive feedback, which is great. But I kind of have my head in the sand a lot because I'm just working, and I'm always surprised when people like know who I am. And not that I have any level of fame, you know what I mean? Even like, if I do a show, I did a show, I want to say in January up in like Boulder, and like there were people came out, they're like, hey, we drove up here from the Springs to see you. It's like, what? Why? That's wild.
When I had a table beside you, I wasn't there. I wasn't there long enough to like talk to you, but I talked to your man, your old boss, and I saw all your stuff, pawed through your things. Rust and a couple other people all bought your 1-to-1 scale weapons. And, you know, at the time, like, I was just kind of enamored with what you had on the table.
Which I look back on and I can't stand. Like, I still even sell some of that stuff, but like the stuff I did in Tinkercad 3-4 years ago, I think kind of looks awful.
Well, I think you're supposed to. You're the creator. You're supposed to think that. But by the time we hooked up at Jolanta, I don't know if you and Chris already knew each other, or you guys got to know each other and you and I got to know each other, and you and John or Alyosha, all of us kind of came together, had beers, and it was fantastic. And
it was a great night and not so great morning.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Yeah. So Chris, the same JoeFest 2021, you had that table that you didn't go to. Chris came by my table like repeatedly, and we would just talk, and I saw him at the following JoeFest, and then like, you know, and we talked then, and then I saw him walk in to Jolanta, and I like got up and went over and said hi. But that was the first time we sat down and talked. I talk to Chris just about every week now. It just turns out he and I are into a lot of the same stuff. You know, we like 80s horror movies, and we like heavy metal, and we like toys, and we just have so much stuff kind of in common that we like. So, and he's doing such a great job painting.
Oh my God. Well, he's kind of like you.
Yeah. I had him on the, that G.I. Joe 3D printing podcast. Last month we did an episode on painting. So he was my guest.
I'm going to have to catch that. He didn't even tell me. Chris is one of these interesting guys that we have a lot of mutual friends, but I didn't know him. We'd been at shows before. He realized we'd even talked before, but just in passing in a group setting before OR. Now he's one of my favorite people. Love talking to Chris. Like, we talk at least weekly.
Yeah. He's just super positive. I really like Chris. I like Chris a lot.
And he came out of nowhere with, hey, I'm painting this one thing, to, hey, I'm painting all of the things.
God bless it, man. Like, my hands and my eyes aren't what they used to be. Like, I used to paint. I don't think I ever got to the level that he is at right now. But I used to paint. Like, that was my thing. And I'm not even capable of it anymore. You know, I used to draw, I'd paint, I would sculpt, and I feel like I would need dedicated months of practice to get back to where I was, because I just don't do that stuff anymore. It's like I can only be good at one thing at a time. And right now it's 3D design.
Well, you're fantastic at it.
Thank you. You're so generous.
No, I'm really not. I've held your product in hand. So it's not generosity. It's laid on the floor with a child playing with your stuff. I have 6-inch equipment that is broken. I do not have Mark II design things that are broken.
Well, you don't have 3D prints. So this is my thing. Like, so I was selling these 3D prints, and every time I would ship something out, I'm just like, please fucking don't break in postage. It's a 3D print. It just is. And it doesn't, no matter how I design it.
They're brittle.
Shipping is brutal. Like everything I pack up, I pack it up and I shake it. And if I can hear any movement inside, I open it and I repack it. I do everything in my power to make sure the stuff I ship survives the shipping process, which is just rough. And it just doesn't. And it's not all the time, but like once a month, once every 2 months, somebody's like, hey, this arrived broken. I just show me a picture and I'll send you a new one, period. But it's brutal. But it's always a concern. And it was a big part of why I wanted to not do additive manufacturing. I wanted to get stuff at a factory with good plastic so it could survive and can have better detail and all the things. That's a huge part of why I wanted to move away from 3D printing. But I'm still doing it. One day I'll have enough steady work doing one thing, hopefully, that I can stop doing that.
So you've been doing some local shows, but you've trimmed down how much you're traveling abroad for your shows. Abroad meaning
out of state.
To other parts of the United States, not necessarily overseas. But you will be at Joe Fest.
I'll be at Joe Fest. I'm absolutely going to be at Codename Iowa, assembly required.
Beautiful.
I would like to go to the DFW Joe Show in Dallas-Fort Worth, which is the same month as Joe Fest, which makes it tough. I don't know if that's going to happen. And if I'm going to do it, I need to pull the trigger soon. I want to hit more shows. I need to get out to the West Coast. I haven't had a presence out there. At the end of the day, I am still, I created a brand and I need to spread the word. And I think hitting these shows is a big way to do it. A lot of the adult collectors in our community still aren't online. They're not on Instagram. They're not in Facebook every day. And so every time I do a show, like most of the people have no idea who I am or what I'm doing or anything.
With that, I know you have an Etsy store, which is just Mark II Designs on Etsy. You have a Facebook presence because you have a G.I. Joe 3D printing group as well as a YouTube podcast or vlog.
Right. There's a Mark II Design Facebook page. There is a Mark II Toys Facebook page. And I have a Shopify store that's mark2toys.com. And so it's two different businesses. The 3D printing, 3D design is Mark II Design. And then the actual manufactured products, that's Mark II Toys.
I've probably been conflating the two for a while. Sorry.
It was probably a terrible idea. It made sense in my head at the time.
This is how people can find you outside of shows and to purchase what you've built so far. You have a lot of stuff, but your main two boxed products are your A and B weapon packs.
They're available on Big Bad Toy Store, hardtofindtoys.net. There's a couple of brick and mortars, Second Chance Toys up in Maryland. There's a comic book shop in Dublin.
Okay.
Called Big Bang Comics, and they carry my stuff. Like,
you're international.
I'm I really need to put more effort into getting into local stores around the country. It's time and work, and I've only got so much of it.
Being in Big Bad Toy Store is huge, and I would love to see more of our creator community enter that realm. I know Strike Force Alpha is there for 3¾, or at least their pre-order is. I don't think they've shipped yet, and you are. So, I think that's incredible. I'd like to see more of that, personally. So Mark II Toys, those weapon packs are available. 1,000 things coming from 1,000 different angles. So if anyone's paying attention, they got a lot to pay attention to. I'm excited for us to sit down and have drinks together again.
Yeah. You want to see something cool? I'm going to do a con exclusive, meaning I'll have it at Joe Fest, but I'll also have it at AR. It'll be just I'm not going to sell it online. You're going to have to physically come see me to get one, so I need to do more shows, right? So I got out of G.I. Joe late 80s, early 90s, You know, it was in high school, just like everyone else, not everyone, but like most people have that dark period. I was out and I remember seeing the commercials for Tiger Force and Python Patrol and being just like, that's dumb. Military vehicles never, ever look like that. You know, I'd been a fan of the realism of the early Joe line. So, you know, I saw them as repaints and didn't appreciate the fact that it was an opportunity for people to get toys that they otherwise would have missed. And I just thought they were super goofy looking. And then year and a half, 2 years ago, whenever I did the that two-seat shark, I had done it at 3 3/4 scale, and I did one at 6-inch scale. And over the course of making it, I would do a test print and, you know, is this the right size? Do these pieces fit together? So I had a couple of bodies that were extra that I couldn't use. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to paint one up Tiger Force and just kind of see how it looks. Because that made, I thought the shark would have been a good Tiger Force.
I mean, yeah, it made it into Sky Patrol and Night Force. It would have been great as a Tiger Force.
It would have been great as a Tiger Force. Tiger Shark. Easy. But so I painted it. And when I was done, I was like, shit, that kind of looks sharp. I kind of like these colors. So I started kind of appreciating Tiger Force. Shortly after that, a friend of mine gave me I don't know what it was called, the Vamp, the Tiger Force.
Tiger Sting.
Tiger Sting? Okay. So I had done the Tiger Force, the Tiger Paw. I had done that for AR last year. And I really genuinely liked the color scheme. And so I started looking at the Python Patrol stuff. And it's like the original stuff, like what we got or would have gotten was an Asp, a Conquest, and a... what is that goofy thing called? I have it sitting. It's literally sitting right here.
The Stun.
Stun. Thank you. Ugh. Which is the goofiest. It's up there with the rat. It's one of the goofiest things. But if you look close at it, like the paint's kind of amazing. And the colors pop. When people have done them after the fact, there's been a couple of like Python Patrol Con exclusive things that I've looked at. It's usually like black with like red checker stripes, which isn't, it's not correct, right? It's a really complex thing. And in my head, it's meant to look like snake scales. So I took that a step and I'm doing a...
Oh, shit.
A Python claw. And what I've done is I've created a more of a snake skin pattern, but kept the colors.
No, that's fantastic.
We'll see. Like, so I brought a couple claws to Joe Fest last year and they flew, you know, excuse the pun, they flew, right? They were just gone. So I've kind of adjusted, and, you know, tweaked my process. And I'm actually, for the first time ever, like building up an actual inventory of something instead of just like, you know, I made 4 last week. I'll put them up. They sell. I have to make some more for next week. I'm going to try and make a bunch of these things. And so that's going to be my con exclusive. I've got, I made some stickers that are on the way, and they're going to look pretty good. Like the old stickers were never truly opaque. So, you know, you slap them on the vehicle and they kind of get lost a little bit. My stuff's all got, it's all based, like it's white ink underneath. So everything's real sharp. I'm pretty excited about it. And then I'll do the helmet for the officer. So I've been doing like an air trooper helmet for a while. I do a blue one and a red one. And now the female trooper pack that's coming is going to have air trooper helmets.
And, you know, the steel battalion or whatever they're called, yeah, they're going to have the jump on them. So this is the perfect timing for a claw.
The claws I've been doing for a while. And just, I started out trying to make a mold so I could cast them. So I did like a 2-part rubber mold, like a polyurethane rubber mold, would do like a 2-part resin to cast them. Because just like trying to crank these out on the 3D printers is just brutal. The molds, it turns out, just don't last very long. Like, I just didn't get that many out of the mold before I had to do another one. And the mold material, it's a platinum-based material. It's expensive. It's just really, it wasn't cost-effective to make a mold and cast it the way I was doing it. As an aside, a lot of the photopolymers have trace elements of sulfur in them. And there's a tin-based mold compound you can buy. A lot of them are tin-based because it's just cheaper. But the sulfur reacts with the tin and it inhibits the curing. So it sort of turns into a fucking mess. So I have to buy the more expensive platinum-based stuff.
And that's another whole community.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Outside of the 3D printing. Like, John Alyosha, he's known for his casting, as is Brian from Toy Department. You've got some great people in this community to work with, but casting's its own group.
It's a beast, man. I consider myself very fortunate in that I found the joke community, which existed before I was there, that I found it when I did, because I've been just making lots of friends and just meeting some really talented, creative people, and it's been great. I apologize. Can I plug one thing?
Dude, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
So I have a Patreon.
Really?
And the kind of the main draw there is STL files, right? Like, so the Ferret files are on there. The Silver Mirage files are on there. The XMLR variant files are on there. What the ass. But like, the plan is to do like, try and do a monthly project, like just one thing a month to put the files up. Sometimes it's a little more. I don't think I've missed a month yet. I'm doing a Thunder Machine, and like that was supposed to have been on there a while ago, but I'm kind of going, I'm putting electronics in it. Like, I have a whole circuit board designed, like it's a thing.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like, people aren't going to be able to just like order circuit boards from me. Like, that's beyond my ability, but I'm going to have one with like blinking police lights and floodlights and headlights and all that kind of stuff. So,
but they can download the files that allows them to then go and add electronics to theirs.
They can download the files. I'll put the schematics up. If you're that kind of person, you can knock it out. If you don't need any of the lights, then you'll just be able to print the thing. I do my best to make it so that a person with an FDM printer or LCD, DLP, whatever resin printer, they can both print the files, and it's all about tweaking the tolerances so that everything should go together nicely. So if you're a 3D printer and you're into G.I. Joe, check out the Patreon if you're interested. I think that it's like $10 a month for the tier that gets you the STL files.
Is it also Mark II Design or is it Mark II Toys?
Yeah, it's Mark II Design on Patreon.
I'm glad you remembered to plug that, because I didn't even think to ask about a Patreon.